Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be unto you all. Eid Mubarak. This is your sister, Ava Muhammad, and welcome again to Elevated Places Network and tonight's program, Ask Minister Ava, with myself, Sister Ava Muhammad, and my wonderful co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, our executive producer, Sister Rona Muhammad, our legal contributor, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, and all of you who make Elevated Places possible and have been doing that for 10 years this year. You do that by calling in at 563-999-3065, and also those of you who log in at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces and those who pull up our archive on our website page all throughout the week, again, blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces, where you can hear all of our programs are archived and available for you to listen to whenever you are available. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for joining us tonight. I want to express on behalf of our Elevated Places family, and I know that all the loyal listeners who dial in and our new ones, if you are with us, that we pray that Allah is pleased with the brother of our brother Terrence Muhammad, who made his transition this week at a young age, and we pray that the family is comforted in the embrace of Allah's love and protection, and knowing that every soul will return to the Creator. And so the flesh is finite, but the spirit is eternal. And Brother Terrence is such a jewel to our Elevated Places family. So, as always, being the soldier, he's still with us tonight, and we can't thank Allah enough for that. We have a very, very special, a spectacular program tonight that we're going to discuss, introduce you to momentarily. But in the interim, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Brother Terrence to take us further into the program before we get into tonight's very, very important, and it's going to be an exciting, informative, and educational theme tonight with some very special people who have taken time from their busy schedules to be with us. Brother Terrence, assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam and Eid Kareem. Yes, it is once again a wonderful, wonderful time to be here on this wonderful show, Elevated Places Network, as Dr. Ava. Once again, we are here. We ask and invite you to tune in every Thursday night and also visit MinisterAva.com, MinisterAva.com, to get all of the e-books, the books, and find out about all of the upcoming things that we have going. And you can find out where you can see videos. You can just, there's just so many things that you can find about good guidance, good teachings from our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad. So we want to make sure that you do visit MinisterAva.com and also join us on Sundays at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern at NOI.org. Some life-giving teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, taught today by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And we're continuing to encourage people to go back to 2020 and listen to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the unraveling of a great nation as we're seeing things that are going on throughout the world. And then, of course, July 4th, 2020, the Criterion, and Savior's Day this year, February the 27th, a swan song, the swan song. So we want to make sure that you continue to hear those messages. And not only that, the beginning and end of the Ramadan prayer line, the words from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and as we said, as of recent, this Monday morning at the close of the Ramadan prayer line. Go to RamadanPrayerLine.com. Always go listen, study, and hear the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Those are our guiding words and guidance in these times that we're living in this troubled time. So, Dr. Ava, you know, it's a lot going on. There's, you know, I have something that I want to share, but, of course, just in the news, mm-hmm. there's the issue of Roe versus Wade and the whole issue about abortion. And so that's a big thing in the news, and people are rising up, people in D.C., people at Supreme Courts, and, you know, a lot of things are going on around that, so we're watching how that develops. And the bigger thing, not just the issue of abortion, but we're also watching, well, we fought for voting rights, so people fought for abortion rights. Things that people are fighting for are getting overturned, and we're looking at, they're looking at things that are going on in Texas. So these issues, as people are looking for the vote, as the midterms are coming up, we're just seeing a lot of different things and a lot of different issues, and political analysts looking at things. Women's rights are coming to bear. But we're just looking at this world and the confusion that this world has. And so we want to pay attention to what is going on around us. As well as I just heard today that they announced the White House, I think it's Corinne Jean-Pierre, I think I'm saying it all wrong. She becomes the first White House press secretary, the first black and LGBTQ person in the role, an open one. So that was like a major news for the day in the White House. And I'm just showing you how this world and what is going on in the world of politics in this world that has been put before us. And something that's funny and not funny, but Dave Chappelle had his show last night. We saw someone rush the stage.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a song by Brand Nubian, Punks Jump Up to Get Beat Down. And sad to say, whoever tried to rush Dave Chappelle, they saw him tackle Dave Chappelle, but then they also saw him on a stretcher with his arm all broke up and his head all beat up. And I only bring that up not to make mockery, but I just say this. You got to be careful who you jump up to and whoever you try to attack, because we here on this side of the railroad tracks, we don't allow anyone to run up and to attack our leadership. So as the world is in total confusion and chaos, we want to make you all know that this is just not the house to play with. This is not the house to run up on, if that's anybody's starts, because we are with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the position that he has taken. Now, as I wrap this up, Dr. Ava, I also just wanted to say this, and blessed is to everyone who celebrated that did go in community and share with the rest of the Muslim world for our prayers and for the Eid feast that there was across the country. and literally across the world. It was good that we broke bread with one another. But I would just wrap up to say I love, and I just left a political debate for district attorney, for a clerk of court in my city, and then it was having candidate debates about sheriff. And in this, you know, I called one of the brothers and I told him just to present a clean glass. Don't do the dirtiness that I saw at the mayoral race. But it got dirty. It got real crazy. Even the people that was throwing the event said, listen, we're not going to have a SHIT mess today. If you got a question, ask a question. Or don't, you know, we're not going to have no mess in here tonight. And the candidates was going off. And it was interesting because I was like, this is our leadership. This is the people that we are supposed to vote for. This is the people that is going to run our city and key areas that affect our lives. And mothers having issues and having problems, having answers about violence and killing and the police. And, you know, and I listened to people skillfully answer questions. And it made me think, and as I came out of that debate, I had already planned, Dr. Ava, in my mind to talk about I love our leadership. I love the leadership in the Nation of Islam, our executive council. Of course, we love the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, but I say that is because we don't value that which God's servant has put before us because we are not around other leadership that is not about the principles of God, not about the principles of love. But I see that in our leadership, and I thank our leadership for the guidance that they are leading our nation, not only for our nation, but for our people, and what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has each and every one of us doing for our community. And it is that leadership that is based on the principles of God. And if any leadership that you may want to elect or back, if their principles are not based on the fundamentals of God and love of our people, then that's not the leadership that you want. And I thank you, Dr. Ava, for the words that you opened this up with. And I thank our brother, our student national assistant to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who I texted last night during the webcast, our national webcast. He called me after, right after the webcast, as tired as he was, just to give his condolences. And I appreciate our leadership because our leadership actually loves the believer, actually loves the people, and work tirelessly day in and day out without hesitation for the well-being of our people. So when you have that, we must testify the good leadership that we have. And I personally know everyone on the executive council, and I can vouch for everyone about their love and commitment to the rise of black people here in the hills of North America. So with that, I thank you, Dr. Ava, and I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Brother Terrence, so much, and I really appreciate you. You're such a soldier. I appreciate you being here and then bringing us a wonderful opening. I'm looking for Sister Attorney Pamela. She doesn't seem to be with us as of yet, and so we may.
Yes, ma'am.
There she goes. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes,
assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam. How are you,
yes,
Sister Attorney?
I am fine by Allah's grace and mercy and Eid Mubarak to you as well and Brother Terrence. Yes, ma'am. I had to press
thank you, number one.
Yes, ma'am. And so thank you so much, Sister Ava. Our show on Tuesday, A Time for Justice, on the Elevated Places Network, we had a show entitled Doing Good in the Community and Helping Those Who Are Battling Against Substance Abuse. And so as Brother Terrence was saying about the leadership and just the solutions that we have in our nation, I was so thankful that we could talk about, you know, solving our own problems, and that's what we talked about on Tuesday. So if anyone wants to listen to the replay, please do. We had a beautiful substance abuse counselor, Sister Mavis Mahan. Then we also had a award-winning rapper and entrepreneur, Brother K. Reno out of Houston, a well-known rapper, and he just does a lot of good talking about using platforms to help people fight against some of the ills that we have. So That was our show on Tuesday. And I'm just so excited, Sister Ava. I wanted to share with your listeners that there's a – many people may know that there's a lawsuit in Tulsa that was filed by plaintiffs who were actually alive during the Tulsa race massacre that occurred in 1921. I think they say it began May 31, 1921. So you have some plaintiffs who are alive. You have Miss Viola Fletcher, who's 107. You've got a brother, Hugh Van Ellis Sr., who is 101, and Leslie Beneford Randall, who's 107 years old. And these are the plaintiffs in a lawsuit that was filed against seven defendants, is what I understand. And so on May the 2nd, which was Monday, the judge ruled that part of the lawsuit can proceed. Actually, there was a motion to dismiss that was filed against the lawsuit, and these are pretty typical motions that defendants will often file to try to get a case dismissed. But this judge, I think her name is Carolyn Wall of the Tulsa County District Court, she actually granted part of the dismissal, but she did rule against dismissing the case, and now the case can move forward. And so according to a series of news articles in the Washington Post, there was one in the Times, just some really interesting coverage, because this lawsuit filed by an attorney by the name of DeMario Solomon Simmons, he's one of the lawyers for the plaintiffs. He's alleging that what happened in Tulsa in May of 31, 1921, is a nuisance. That's one of the allegations, according to the news reports. And he's saying that the defendants caused a public nuisance in 1921, and that that devastation caused by the mob continued to affect Greenwood today. And some of the defendants were the city of Tulsa, the Tulsa County Sheriff, the Oklahoma National Guard, and actually the Chamber of Commerce. So these allegations, you know, they go on to talk about how Mr. Simmons said the massacre was one of the most heinous acts of racial terrorism committed in the U.S. This is according to the Washington Post, by those in power against black people since slavery, and he says specifically that these white elected officials and business leaders not only failed to repair the injuries they caused, they engaged in conduct to deepen the injury and block repair. Also, it talks about how the city police department and county sheriff's office deputized and armed white Tulsans to murder, loot, and burn the nearly 40 city blocks of the Greenwood District, the lawsuit states. It finally says also, according to Washington Post, the lawsuit accuses the Chamber of Commerce of joining with other officials after the massacre to impose martial law and round up survivors into concentration camps, only releasing them if white employers sponsored them to work. And so, you know, just in closing, as everyone knows, Greenwood community, which is known as Black Wall Street, you know, and the Tulsa massacre that occurred there in May 31, 1921, where the blocks and restaurants and hotels and theaters that were owned and ran by black entrepreneurs were destroyed. And, you know, two conflicting, they say, one newspaper says as many as 300 people were killed and more than 1,200 homes destroyed. The other, Washington Post, says that you had 800 injured, 300 killed, and 10,000 were left without homes. And so just in closing, I really thought it was so important to quote what Ms. Fletcher said. She's one of the witnesses. She's 107 years old, and she testified before Congress. She said that, "I still see black men being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned, and I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams." So, you know, according to the Washington Post, there has, I think, no white man was ever charged no white person was ever arrested or charged in the massacre. So this lawsuit, I encourage us, we're going to keep looking at it and pray Allah that they get the, you know, get an outcome. So that's what I wanted to share. And thank you very much for your time. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam. You know, it's so appropriate that we're beginning the program with Tulsa, the obliteration of the Greenwood section of Tulsa, Oklahoma, as a prelude to the Detroit Mecca project, because those who may be unfamiliar with the Tulsa destruction need to really do the research. Now we have documentaries available. We have film available. You know, as I'm listening to you and going back over in my mind what happened on that day that we learned of, the U.S. government and the media is just up in arms and so emotionally distraught over what is happening in the Ukraine. And they've done episodes on various news outlets on the trauma to the children in the Ukraine with the bombings, the death, being uprooted from their homes. This was an entire world that was wiped out in the most violent and horrific manner. And reading some of the history and some of the testimony of other witnesses and people that lived there in the earlier years when they were still alive, the trauma, and to hear you speak of the sister saying to this day, after living 107 years on this earth, she still relives the violence of that day. It, you know, if you talk about a Holocaust, that's what that was. And so at a minimum, something should be done in the way of reparations. And as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said at the NCOBRA convention several years ago, reparations is land. Land.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, it was said by the survivors of the massacre, the war, because that's what it was. It was the first aerial attack on people in America since the invention of the airplane.
That's right.
And it was on black folks here in America. You know, and just the hypocrisy and wickedness to talk about what is being done to the people of Ukraine is amazing to me. But it just proves to us the truth, the irrefutable truth of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad sets forth in the Muslim program, that it is impossible to live in peace with these people. It just simply isn't possible, because this is nothing but pure envy and hatred that caused this to happen. And people that lived there at the time, they said you wanted for nothing in the Greenwood section. It was the equivalent of some of these affluent white enclaves that you see in the United States all over, you know, you see all over America now. Every major city has these white enclaves that they've put together in anticipation of what's coming. So they don't have to leave a radius of a few blocks. Their school is there, their groceries, their medical, dental, parks, playgrounds, everything they want and need is in this area, so they don't have to go anywhere for it. while we're always having to make lengthy trips to get what we want, and that's why tonight's guest and tonight's program is so important, because our big problem is failure to obey the instructions of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and now the Messenger Messiah in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and the instructions from Justice Sorrells in 2015. Make your own community a safe and decent place to live. And that's what our forebears tried to do in Greenwood, in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. But they weren't able to protect themselves the way we are, and it was not the fullness of time. It was a few years after the end of Satan's rule. It ended in 1914, but how many people get an eviction notice and still remain where they are? So the time ended, but Satan has been fighting to remain in place ever since then. And now, especially if you check the COVID section this week in the current Final Call newspaper, Brother Dr. Ridgely write a very insightful article about the efforts to control us through biological surveillance, through use of the vaccine, and the ultimate aim of the depopulation agenda. So I'm not going to take up any more time, because we want to get into tonight's program. And I don't know if Sister Donna Muhammad, I don't know if she's joined us yet or not. I don't think so. But I do want to thank Sister Donna Muhammad, who has been serving as the moderator for the Elevated Places Network monthly Zoom presentation, Building Our Promised Land. And tonight's guest are a part of the movement to carry out the minister's instructions to take Detroit. And we're blessed to be joined tonight by Brother Kamal Muhammad, the former National Secretary of the Nation of Islam, a son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the founder and organizer of the Detroit Mecca Project that he brought to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And we are also joined by Brother Fahim Muhammad, who is a design builder, to discuss rebuilding wasted cities. So it's amazing, Sister Pamela and Brother Terrence, that this is the subject for tonight. And now comes this news that Sister Attorney Pamela shared regarding Tulsa. So with that, I'm going to open up. Let me open up the mics for Brother Kamal and Brother Fahim. They made a tremendous presentation on our Zoom program. And we want you to go to, Sister Donna is joining us. Sister Donna, I'm going to, assalamu alaikum. I'm going to ask you, can you share with the listeners where, is it on projectseparation.com, the replay, where they can see the replay?
Yes, ma'am. They can go to www.projectseparation.com to see the previous replay and all the replays, as well as go to our YouTube channel. And that's projectseparation.com, again, is the website. And the YouTube channel is Project Separation, is the name of the YouTube channel. And you can see all the previous presentations as well as subscribe.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, because that visual component is so powerful. But even though we are an audio presentation, this is going to be so enlightening and inspiring to our listeners, because I think all of us can agree we really need to seriously contemplate getting up out of here. And that begins with making our own communities a safe and decent place to live. So I first want to welcome both of our brothers, Brother Kamal Muhammad and Brother Fahim Muhammad, who are just phenomenal brothers. As any of you who are not familiar with them, you will be shortly. And I think we'll start with Brother Kamal. And Brother Kamal, if you could just take the mic, and it belongs to you and Brother Fahim tonight. At a certain point, we're going to open up for questions. One thing we will have on this program is we will have the live callers to have the dialogue and exchange, and I know they'll have some questions for you. But if you could tell us, Brother Kamal, how all of this began, and you know, provide some information on where we are now and what the listeners can do to become part of this movement. Oh, and assalamu alaikum, sir. Eid Mubarak.
Wa alaikum salam, Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad. Thank you so much. I am honored to be here with you, your staff, and your listeners. I'm truly humbled. Thank you again. So if we go back to where this started, I have to say it started when the Honorable Minister Farrakhan asked me to become the National Secretary. At that time, I was I had been involved in the field of finance as a stockbroker. I'd been a commodities trader. I'd been a futures trader. I'd been all over the financial field. And the minister knew that, and he said to me, "Brother, I'd like you to see if you can somehow make it so that the believers can benefit as the nation grows, the believer grows financially." He said, sort of like stocks, but, you know, not quite, but something like that. So I all the time that I was the national secretary, I kept thinking of that, because it was like he had put me on a job mission, not just to handle the books and records and the achievements of the Nation of Islam, but to help the believers improve by being involved in the nation's programs. So fast forward to when I was relieved from the post of National Secretary by our great Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and replaced by our great National Secretary, Brother Saad Muhammad. At that time, he said, "Well, Brother, I want you to be the investment advisor for the nation." And I knew he didn't mean things like stocks and bonds. He mentioned gold at that time, but you know, I didn't think that that's what he really meant to do. So I started looking at land. And at that time, well, not at the time, but shortly thereafter, we had this major crash in the economy. And that was in with the mortgage crash and the housing failure. And I mean, everything was like a dominoes falling around this country. The epicenter of that problem was in Detroit, actually. As you know, the automobile industry collapsed. Several of the automobile industries had to get government bailouts. The banking system almost collapsed. Several banks had to get bailed out. And the real estate market collapsed. Foreclosures were all over the place. Well, the epicenter of that was in Detroit. And I'm looking at the news lately, and I'm seeing what's happening in Ukraine, and you see these bombed-out buildings and things. Some of you may remember that Detroit looked like that back in 2008, 2009, 2010. I would go in Detroit and it would be literally devastation. The people there were, many of them, hopeless. I mean, the city itself went bankrupt. I don't know if everyone remembers this.
Yes.
So at that time, I said, well, maybe this is what I'm here to do. Maybe Allah is lowering this or ruining this situation so that we can come, get our foot in the door in places where we weren't able to get in before, because if some of you may remember, many of you may remember, Detroit was the powerhouse of the United States, the manufacturer of automobiles for the world. And it was truly an economic center for the United States. It's sitting on a piece of land that's right across from Detroit, and most of the trade from Detroit to the U.S. comes to from Canada to the U.S. comes through Detroit. It's on the St. Lawrence Seaway, so it's got access to all kinds of trade, et cetera. And that was picked specifically by Mr. Ford, who picked that so that he could distribute his cars all across the world. So the point I'm making is this city had been brought to its knees. I went in and I said, let me buy some of these properties, because I'm here. You can buy properties for $1,000, $2,000, even $500. So I went there, and yes, you actually could buy properties for that price. And I bought some just to see. I met with Minister Dr. Ava and the Executive Council and the Minister, and I told them my plan, and I said, I'm going to try it and see what happens, and I'll bring you updates, which I did. And I mentioned it to the Minister in detail. I shouldn't say mention. I gave him detailed information about this, and he told me, he said, brother, you're coming right out of Scripture with this, and I'm going to give you the Scripture he's talking about.
Yes, sir.
So this is in Isaiah, and I'm going to read, it's Isaiah talking about a priesthood that will be raised from the people, a priesthood that will be God's priest and would do all kinds of wonderful things for the people. Well, let me read to you what this says here. This is from a specific version that I like. It's from the New Living Translation, and I like this version because it says, some of you will rebuild the deserted ruins of your cities. Then you will be known as a rebuilder of walls and a restorer of homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Scripture. And like I said, the minister told me, he said, brother, you're stepping and walking right into Scripture. And we as Muslims and black people in America, period, need to recognize that this is our destiny to walk into Scripture. Because the Scripture is talking about us. So now it's our time to walk into it and take our place. And I attempted to do that. I'm attempting to do that. And it's not easy. I complained. I can't say I complained, but I went to the minister for help many times, and I told him all my troubles that I was having. One time I bought property in the auction, and I tried to buy 20 properties, and I ended up buying 40 because of the mechanisms of the auction. I did not know that I was two times as many properties as I was doing. So finally, I when the auction was over and I got the notification, I had 44 properties instead of 20-some-odd properties. I said, oh, boy, well, I guess this is Allah's will here. So and you're not going to believe the price I paid for these properties. It only cost me $60,000 to buy 44 properties. That was an amazing feat, but that was not the problem. The problem was rehabbing the properties, keeping the properties, and selling the properties. So I was blessed to be able to do that. And the property went into the hands of many believers and other people. It's not in my hands anymore. I only have about now maybe 12 properties. But it's been quite of an expanding experience for me. It's expanded me so that I'm learning, understanding, and trying to make sure that other people benefit, which they have. I mean, the properties, I remember in 2016 at Savior's Day in Detroit, we brought up three believers who had bought three properties from me, each for $10,000. Every one of them have either owned the properties still now and they're worth $50,000 to $60,000, or they sold the properties and tripled or so on their money, which is fine. The properties are made for you to either own, live in for yourself, by yourself, or for your own benefit, or rent to people for your benefit and theirs, because the people living in Detroit need good homes. They need the homes that we can provide them. Or you can sell them to someone else at a good price so that they can take advantage of these opportunities. But now we're trying to go even bigger and create a whole community for our people. And that is what the subject of this call is, to try to build our own community. Detroit is already 85% black, the whole city of Detroit, 85% black. It's already separated for us. We're already there. We just have to take control. And then we found a suburb of Detroit. I don't even like to talk about it that much because it seems like it's just right for us, and I don't want anybody to mess it up for us.
Yes, sir.
Because they're always, the enemy is always there to get in our path. But this city is
only
3.9 square miles in size. It's very small, but it's surrounded on three sides by Detroit. It's basically a suburb of Detroit that is inside Detroit. This is where Ford started his plant, and he built the city for the specific purpose of being not a part of Detroit, but being in Detroit. It was his own separate city.
Yes, sir.
Now, we can actually affect this city by putting what is really a small amount of effort and money into the city. We could really convert the city into a diamond of achievement and show what black people can represent and what black people can produce if we put our minds and will together to do this. So that's the goal. And I need help. I need a lot of help to do this kind of thing. It's a small city, but, I mean, I've never developed a city or even a block. So, I mean, that's why I have people like Brother Fahim helping me. I have Brother Student Minister Dr. Halim helping me. I have Sister Nina Muhammad helping me, and others. Many others have helped me along the way, from people and donating money, from people buying our properties. I've had all kinds of help, and I thank Allah for everyone. I thank Allah for the minister, and I thank Allah for Minister Dr. Ava, who has helped me from the beginning and is still helping me. So that's basically, I hope I explained everything. I get kind of lost in my thoughts. So, I mean, if you'd like me to continue, if you'd like Brother Fahim to continue, we definitely, I'll end by saying this, we definitely have properties for people to buy. We definitely have room and need for investors. I have a company that is a not-for-profit 501c3 not-for-profit that we can use for investment purposes. We've got everything, the bones and the structure of everything to move forward. Right now, our main problem now is finance. So I'm looking for people that can help me raise money. We need tens of millions of dollars to do this job.
Yes, sir.
I'm throwing it out there. We'll see what comes my way. The minister said whatever I needed would come. Help would
yes,
come.
Sir.
And it has. So we need more. So I'll turn it over to Brother Fahim or you, Sister Ava.
Oh, thank you, Brother Kamal. And as I noted, we don't have the visual, but on the Zoom presentation, you actually showed some homes that are available for purchase and do require some work, which is part of the process of developing your own. But can you give, before we go to Brother Fahim, and we'll do this again toward the end, but where can the listeners go and what should they do if they have an interest in getting involved in the Detroit Mecca project? Everything from fundraising to investment to having an individual property for themselves, even, and of course, you know, this program is all over the country and beyond. You know, people may actually want to consider living there. But you pointed out before, we have to start thinking on a higher, broader level. You know, you can never have too much real estate. And so,
yes, ma'am.
This, you just said it, this is about control. And so if we've been of a mindset that we're being asked to move to Detroit and buy a home, we have to rethink that. We're being asked to invest in our future. And, you know, this
yes,
is
ma'am.
The city where Master Farid Muhammad met the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It is our Mecca, okay? It is the center and the launching pad of a new world order. So it is critical to our future that we take control. And as you said, it's already black. We just don't run it. And
right.
I think we're probably, I'm hoping that in the very near future, we can have a gathering come up that we can call for people to come up there, you know, and over a few days confer on actually moving out on this project, because you have done a lot of phenomenal work in making this vision a reality. And as you said, though, you need help, and we need to, helping you is helping ourselves. And you have some brilliant minds and committed people around you, and one of them is Brother Fahim Muhammad. And he is also joining us tonight, just a fabulous brother, a design builder. And Brother Fahim, we'd like you to join in the discussion at this point and bring to the listeners what you would like to, and then we can open up for discussion. And you too, Sister Donna, as our moderator for Building Our Promised Land, you feel free at any time to inject.
Yes, ma'am. Bismillah, Rahman, Rahim. Id Mubarak, family.
Id Kareem.
Id Kareem.
It is an honor to be on your show once again, Dr. Ava Muhammad. I'm completely honored by the opportunity to be amongst the believers, to communicate, to convey, to discuss ideas and concepts on how we can better control, develop, and sustain our communities. Brother Kamal has definitely done his due diligence by being in a position to where he is creating a land bank within himself in terms of being the imagery that we need to see that actually holds said pieces of property that we could pull from, in addition to him needing the resources and skills of other individuals that can help acquire additional properties so that we can define, outline, and specify a territory that we could potentially call our own, then dictate what we see, the experiences that we have, and how we live and protect within our community. I myself, I am a design builder. I really don't like labels, but at the end of the day, it's necessary to actually have vital individuals who have credible experience and practice to help guide the experience, as well as the land purchase, whether that be residential, whether that be commercial, whether that be industrial, whether it be horizontal, doing civil work, roads and highways. We need to actually have credible individuals within our community that are for us and wanting to see us do well, to help in guiding us and making sound decisions, because these are financial decisions. You can only get as far as what your network is actually presented. So I'm happy to be of a resource, you know, to my community as mm-hmm. well as to the nation as a whole. So,
oh,
I mean,
yes, sir.
I myself, I've been practicing for 23 years. I've done everything from hotels to gas stations to grocery stores to land development community projects to freestanding developments on the urgent care side, and doing a host of retail developments across the United States, in addition to overseeing and managing and providing professional recommendations for, you know, the U.S. government on projects both locally as well as overseas. So on my end, I feel like it's always a blessing to be able to come into my community and be able to communicate, to speak the language, in addition to make it plain to our people in terms of the said resources that we need, the path we take, the process that it actually involves, and striving to be a stakeholder and providing, you know, a more clear, precise method and methodologies on executing things or executing tasks related to design, construction, and development.
I had some. Yes, ma'am. So to Brother Fahim, this is kind of directed to Brother Fahim, as he was talking about the execution and the clearness. Now, one of the things that you brought up in the presentation in regards to us, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We do have the accomplishments of the Muslims, and I remember speaking with you in regards to, for instance, the FISH program that was under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, where millions of pounds was being transported and what that looks like in terms of supply chain. So I wanted to know if you could speak into, again, kind of what it looks like when we're talking about the concept of building community, what it looks like maybe in terms of the nine ministries, the services, the skill sets needed to make this a complete reality. As Brother Kamal is dealing right now with the home and getting us there and overpopulating, but just the design, the building, what do we need? What are the skill sets? What does that look like? And how do we not, you know, spin our wheels reinventing the wheel? I hope that I was clear.
I get the gist of what you're actually communicating. I think the prelude in terms of this discussion was very powerful in terms of, you know, speaking about our ancestors in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was really captivated by what I heard years ago when I first got exposed to the documentary, which was called Before They Die. And they talked about the businesses, the townships, the various business types that we owned, hotel, gas stations, banks, retail shops, grocery stores, and a conglomerate of different types of businesses that serviced our community. And we flourished and did exceptionally well within that region of the United States before the said events actually took place. It captivated me so much that, you know, on my business travels, I made sure I had to take a trip to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and visit the museum that they actually had there and speak to some of the said representatives so I can get a clear understanding of what that experience was like, in addition to the things that they do to impede our success and derail our ability to be able to sustain and maintain our own communities. So as it relates, it's really sitting back and creating, you know, clear plans, clear processes, communicating and conveying what we want to do, what we desire to do. We have to sit down and plan before we begin to move out. You know, if we want to have a 10-mile radius, we want to have a 4-mile radius. We define a said area that we want to work within, and then we dictate the various businesses that support that, the community. We identify the locations where our mosques, where our schools, where our shops, where our homes, where our multifamily, where our single family, where all that's actually going to be, and we create the policies and guidelines to govern that community so that we can police and we can define, hey, these are the set laws, you know, that govern what we do and how we do it within our community. But the people and the resources, we already have that amongst us. I mean, you know, all we need is certain individuals with said level of experience. So if you're into construction, you know, if you're a framer, if you're a plumber, you know, if you do HVAC work, working collectively with an architect and a general contractor to help orchestrate those trades and executing those said paths is going to aid us in building, remodeling, and painting the image related to the things that need to be executed. You know, but it takes a host of a variety of different types of individuals with said experiences, because it's, and building a community is not just a builder or an architect, you know, but you have to have the various businesses that can fund and funnel the tax dollars that are needed to make sure we have clean streets, clean thoroughfares. You know, we have trash pickup, we have waste management, we have street lighting, we have a police force that polices and governs that said territory that we're talking about. So there's a host of said individuals and professionals that can aid in that space. It's amazing to me, because I tell you, I went from building, you know, community hospitals to community freestanding ERs to, and I see the need. I understand the processes and procedures that that they implement within that said space, but that's not my lane. That's not my focus. But in terms of building that vertical structure that they can work within, you know, I understand the regulatory process of actually creating it, and I know why it's so vital, and I know the locations and where it should be. In addition to, I have a firm understanding of knowing the adjacent businesses that will aid that specific location in running efficiently and effectively. I hope that helps in terms of your question.
Can I jump in here, Dr. Ava?
Yes.
And the reason why I want to jump in here, because what Brother Fahim said was just, like, very clear, and I'm glad that he broke it down from the broader sense, because I think, you know, what he said is not emotional and is very – so I would put it this way. So when Brother Kamal, one of the things he said, I brought property, but, you know, how to build the city, how to build the community, how to do all that, that's another thing. Even with buying the properties and finding the right contractors to rehab and do all of the work that's necessary, the land, lawn care, and all those things, that's a beautiful thing. So you have these homes. You got that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. But what Brother Fahim just brought into this scope of conversation is that even having property and land is not disconnected from the other entities of government and city officials, as Student Minister Dr. Halim talks about city planning, of how to deal with who is responsible for the roadways and upkeep of the roads, the lighting in your community, the policing in your community, and the whole infrastructure. So once you get land, there's a whole thing. And I think one time we had a conversation about, you know, the mosque medicine and then the educational and then building around that. But even building around that, if you're not involved in the different aspects of that, then you have these homes that may be in the area that's bad lighting, no street, you know,
wow.
But you bought this stuff, but you haven't dealt
yes.
with the governmental part of how to infiltrate and connect with different people to make sure that there's a maintenance, the water and sewage, there's no landfills that dumped in there, or there's no pollution or power plants in your neighborhood. And that's what happens in the black community. We don't choose that, but we're the path of least resistance because we don't have those sitting in place to guarantee that certain things are not brought in our community, not promoted in our community, billboards, liquor stores, the zoning. So there's a comprehensive blueprint that has to be done where everybody, when we talk about privacy and separation, has a political part and piece to play in this process as we're building these communities. But I really want to commend him talking about the infrastructure. If you remember Dr. Ridgely, literally going to city council meetings, and he ran for city council or some position in the city, not because that's what he wanted to do, because that's not Doc. He did it because he was trying to bring the issue about fixing the roads down by the farm and bringing the whole issues and who put money where and not put money where, and finally the city did come and do what they saw to do in cleaning those roads. So that whole scope is very much so necessary. I'm glad that was brought out.
You know, it's funny, Brother Terrence, as you mentioned roads and byways and development. You know, in some cases I've actually traveled internationally where in a lot of our Caribbean islands, and I was in Jamaica, and, you know, the roads in Jamaica were just so rough. I mean, number one, you look like you're climbing off a cliff. The next minute, you know, you have a bumpy territory, and it's you wonder how people sustain their vehicles over a said period of time. And so we're riding. I'm riding along the coast, and all of a sudden, the streets just got smooth. And I said, "What just took place? Like, why do I have paved streets?" I mean, they had it completely asphalted. They had the streets lined. They had street signage. And I said, what's going on? There had to be a reason as to why this is actually taking place. And the further we go along, next thing I see a large plantation. And it's a banana plantation. And I said, wow. I said, well, that must be a really big business. And the closer I get to the plantation, I begin to see Asian or Oriental writing on the business, on the streets.
Wow.
Designating that said parcel within that said region was actually owned by another demographic outside of the community. Now, I tell you, that road was completely paved all the way to the port. So you have entities that will come into your community, invest in infrastructure, build the roads, build the highways, then turn around and give you back that set piece, and we give them certain land rights. We give them certain resources so that they can actually take those products in and out of our communities into their communities. And this wasn't
right.
just in Jamaica. They had the same discussions and issues in Africa. They had the same discussions and issues all across the Caribbean. And we wonder how is it that, you know, we end up issuing and giving out our said parcels or our said land and our said resources. You know, it's largely because of level of, you know, unfortunately, there is a certain level of corruption in some way, but in addition to, they also destabilize our communities to where we can't have trade and commerce in said areas and do extend, move products and goods because of the fact that there are certain rules and guidelines that prohibit certain countries, you know, indigenous countries from doing said things. So, you know, infrastructure-wise, it's very important. So, like, if you're going out to a rural area, you know, I once worked for a land development company in Houston, Texas, and you got to excuse my French. So they sent me out to a meeting. They said, Fahim, we need you to go to this meeting, and we need you to figure out what's taking place on these highways. And I said, well, why do you want me to go to a highway meeting? He said, well, we'll sit in the meeting, take the notes, and when you come back, I want you to define to us specifically where that highway is actually going. I said, well, all right, I'll go. And, you know, at the end of the day, throughout the course of the meeting, there was like, hey, they talked about the roads, they talked about the highways, they talked about the toll roads and everything that was going on. But the key point was when the government begins to extend highways, they begin to extend infrastructure. When infrastructure is actually extended, gotcha. Developers want to build in and around where infrastructure is extended because that reduces their infrastructure or their cost to do said projects.
Listen. Yeah.
You know, in development terms, they say follow the, and I hate to say it, but follow the, you know, follow the sewer lines. Because the sewer lines and the water lines are what dictates where new developments are going to be, where new communities are going to be. You know, sure enough, 5 years later, that's a major developed community with 300-400 homes. And you got 300-400 homes. After a certain percentage of homes, you're going to have to build schools because there's tax dollars in those said communities to have schools. You're going to have a fire station. You're going to have a police station. You're going to have shops and grocery stores that understand within that said demographic, there's a said amount of income per household that's going to dictate the need for said specific goods. And each business that comes to that area, they specifically identify said demographics that have a certain income, that have a certain population, that say, hey, I want to plant my business here.
Right.
You know, so we wonder why and we wonder how, even in the black community, how we always end up with certain fast food chains. It's because of the fact that they understand what we eat, how we eat it, and they're going to look at that demographic and say, hey, that demographic matches our business model, so we're going to plant here, here, and here, and we're going to make sure we capture that said piece. You know, but, you know, if we are in the business of community building in which we're taught, we can then turn around and dictate what we desire to see, the businesses that we desire to see running along the major thoroughfares within our said communities. We need coffee shops. We need businesses that are going to be open during the day, not just at night. I think it's fine to have recreational spaces at night, but during the day, we need to have locations to where we can have group gatherings to discuss business, to discuss trade and commerce, and have a level of exchange to where, you know, your children, your wife, your grandmother can go someplace to have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, and just have a good exchange. But unfortunately, throughout the United States, we're not seeing that as much. You know, I live in Houston, Texas. I live in Third Ward, which is, you know, historical black community. Regentrification is actually taking place on a major magnitude in this area. But the reality is that the majority of folks who live in Third Ward that actually have our demographic are renters.
Right. Listen.
We're not major stakeholders. In order to be a major stakeholder, we need to be in a position to where we have ownership, to where our said political representatives are going to listen what we communicate and what we say because we have major tax dollars funding their campaigns, and we need to hold them accountable for what we see and what takes place. So it is, you know, Brother Terrence, it is a passionate place for me because I look at the bigger picture, you know, because, you know, you see what actually you know, you see what takes place, not just in Houston and gentrification, but it's taking place all across the United States. But if you have brothers like Brother Kamal, who's actually providing a resource, a bank of properties that we could purchase, that we could invest in,
right,
and that we could have a level of ownership in, it changes the game. That's what we need in every community. We need land banks. We need said entities that say, hey, you know what? My mother moved out. I live out in the suburbs someplace else. I don't know what to do with the property. You know, I mean, is there something we can do? Is it some person we can sell it to so that we see imagery of ourselves and our historic communities? That's why they have land banks across the United States. And when you create a land bank and you have a certain pool of land and you do business with certain said developers, you can have a dictating pool of what takes place within your community and who has a buy-in on major developments that are actually taking place. They do it all across the United States. But we just need to understand the different business models that are actually being implemented so that we can have a certain level of execution when it comes to what we own. You know, so even if you're a renter, we can still create a place to where our people can go, something clean, something wholesome, you know, something community related, so they can have pride in where they live and what they do. So it's an interesting space. You know, a couple of years ago, prior to COVID actually, you know, affecting our, you know, our country, surprisingly enough, there was an institution called Elevated Places in Houston, Texas, where they, you know, have a beautiful campus and a beautiful institution to where they're raising and they're grooming our youth. You know, the administrator, Sister Melba, Sister Waikiti, and there's a teacher by the name of Sister Monifa. They had a 6th and 7th grade class that were invested, were entered into a competition for the past couple of years. I'm not sure if they're currently active within it, but they entered into a competition to where they were building future cities. And I mean, they asked me to come in and say, hey, Brother Fahim, can you come in and can you get a student some advice in terms of what to do and how to do it? And I said, okay, cool, no problem. So they gave them a certain program that they had to do in order to enter competition. You had to have a certain amount of buildings, certain amount of residential, certain amount of streets. You had to have a wastewater plant. You had to have a certain level of green space for growth. You have to have a mayor. You have to have a certain city budget. These were 6th, 7th, and 8th graders that were designing a said city area. The conversation that we're having now, our babies were having, and they were having it efficiently and effectively. They were asking me questions. I was like, hey, brother, I don't know what to tell you or not. I got to call somebody about that. But it was such a beautiful experience to where they got to see the city built. They understood the process. They understood the procedures. They understood the chain effects of them not actually having a sanitary system. They understood the concept of not having enough homes, about how they could potentially lose workers and the sanitary system not work. They understood the process of knowing how to create their sanitary, their water system, their plumbing systems, and the chain effects of not actually having that in place. And it was beautiful. But the amazing thing is our children are capable of actually having these conversations. But if they don't see us in a position to we're implementing this, you know, that's going to go on one ear out the other because they need to see it practiced. We have to be in a position to where we're designing and we're creating and we're implementing so they can actually have something that they can cling to and they can carry on with. I don't want to go too far into that, but you know, it's a very passionate place, but we should be in a position to where we're doing and we're developing, you know, for the betterment of not just for us, but the future generations that are actually coming.
Yes. Oh, praise be to Allah. It's awesome. All right, we're going to start taking some calls. and continue this incredibly enlightening and inspiring discussion. But remember, I need to get from both of you where the listeners can go to get more information. And Sister Donna, I think you all did a survey at the end of the Zoom presentation that we might want to make reference to. And, of course, we're really strongly recommending that you go and watch the Zoom presentations, because both Brother Kamal and Brother Fahim, as well as our other panelists that were on, provided powerful visual images of exactly what we're talking about. Right now, we're going to go to the phone and get a few of our callers. We've got Brother Daryl, who has a comment. Brother Daryl, assalamu alaikum, Eid Mubarak.
Assalamu alaikum, family. Can you hear me?
Assalamu alaikum, salam, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, praise be to Allah, to Brother Kamal and Brother Fahim. I won't forget Fahim. I have a son named Fahim. Praise be to Allah. I'm kind of distorted, and I'm going to make it short. First thing I want to ask, then I'm going to come back right quick. How's Brother Ruben doing, Sister Ava? Have you heard anything about our beloved brother? I know it's been some time went past. Have we heard anything on Brother Ruben?
I know the last time was that a couple months ago that we talked about him, and I know he was doing okay. They were just confined in Australia. Has been very extreme with these so-called COVID policies, but he had indicated he and his daughter were doing okay.
Praise be to Allah. I have been trying to get on just the third Thursday. Get on early, 15 minutes early, and listen to the music, and get to the callers, then a phone drop. So praise be to Allah. It must be meant for me to talk today. But with the property that you're speaking about, I'm willing now, and I'm being forced to come home, even though Allah blessed me with 3 acres here in Pensacola, Florida. And I was trying to make it an oasis for like the minister said, for our children and our grandchildren and those yet to come. And then after we finished this, I was going to come back home and get into when they were telling me that the minister, and I thank Allah for you, Brother Kamal, that the minister asked you to go in and help the believers to get some type of help. And I wanted to invest back home. But now the way this economy is going, since Detroit had that bankrupt and houses and stuff was went into foreclosure, that's why I came to Florida, and Allah blessed me to get this up. And now we got hit with Hurricane Sally, and now I just got back after waiting almost 3 years. My mother passed. We struggled to put this property together. It was all wooded area. And if you've seen it from the beginning, you say, oh, Allah blessed us to really beautify it. We got our own well. We got our own subject thing. We got our own power line, everything. But we just went today, mediator. They didn't want to take it to court. They went from $140,000. Down to what my lawyer said, I'm going to ask for 102. I said, that's not enough. We didn't invest too much. My house is total. And I'm living back in this house with mold and everything. But long story short, they offered, through the mediator, $15,000. That's an insult. You know, how they doing black people here in the South? You struggle to get property, and you beautify it, and you put insurance on your home, then this is how you get treated. But Allah made me a fighter. I'm not going to let my mother go in vain. We're going to fight this. And I said, if I can't get nothing, well, nobody get nothing. But what my question is, I want to get some property in Detroit. And I would like to, Sister Rona could give my number and everything. And I could explain to both of you all to see what you could help me do until this thing is settled here. But I am now ready to sell everything and go back home and rebuild what we did here and then add into the community, which they have a lot of vacant houses there. But my concern is I want land, because I don't mind living around our people, but I want to live around the believers. Some blocks on both sides is nothing but 3 houses, and I tried to get 4 or 5 lots, see if the believers could come in, but I couldn't get into it with you, Brother Kamal. And once we could make that into a community of the believers, we could control that. That's when the 10,000 feelers come in. But until then, it's hard to get the lot because they saying you have to have a house there, and that's not true. People are coming from out of country and just coming in our neighborhood, buying up everything, but why is it so hard for us? So maybe through you,
right.
You can help us to get something there. But and one more quick thing. Did you hear it was 2 weeks? This five-year-old girl was came to school with a margarita, and she told her classmate, 5 years old, said it was a fruit punch or whatever. Passed it out to all the children. Now they're trying to press charges on the five-year-old. Did you hear about that in one of the public schools?
What? She came to school with a what?
Margarita. Tequila.
Moderator?
Mix, they call it margarita. It's a mixed tequila drink that their family had.
Oh, margarita. Oh.
Yes. And she had a whole gallon of whatever pint. What happened was she distributed to all of her classmates. And they said, thank God they weren't alcohol poison. But the teachers didn't take chance to, did go and check it. And now they want to press charge on the five-year-old in the family. So this thing is out of control. But I thought that was what I was trying to tell you 2 Thursdays ago, what happened with this five-year-old that they're trying to press charges on. It's crazy.
And where is this?
It was 2 weeks ago.
Where did this happen?
This happened, I don't know exactly where it happened at, but when I heard it for the second time, matter of fact, I was listening to Steve Harvey's show, and it came up again about this five-year-old bringing a margarita into the school as thought it was a fruit drink or something and passed it out to the siblings there in the school. But you can go on Steve Harvey's show and probably pull up the all the rest of the information. But if I can, if something wrong, I could give you my number to both of you all, and because I don't want to take up all of the time, but I'm ready to come home.
Yes, sir.
It's hell here in Pensacola, you know, and I just ready to come on back home where the believers at. As-salamu alaykum.
Wow. And
Sister Ava, at this point, can I give my email address, and maybe that will
make
it easy for people to contact me. That email address is, it's easy to remember, thedetroitmeccaproject.com, spelled out completely, www.thedetroitmeccaproject.com. And there's a submission form on that website, so you just fill it out, send it to me, and I will get back to you. May take a minute, but I will get back to you.
Okay, so everyone's got that then. All one word, the Detroit Mecca Project.com.
.com, right.
And we'll forward Brother Daryl's number to you as well, Brother. Come on.
Yes, that's already done.
Okay, praise. Oh, praise be. Look at you
okay.
all.
And my email address is fw@urbandbdsandboy.net. That's fw@urbandb.net.
Okay, so that's these are great emails. Okay, let's see.
And Dr. Ava.
fw@urbandb.net. That's Brother Fahim, everyone.
Yes.
fw@urbandb.net.
Awesome.
Okay.
And Dr. Ava, can I jump back in here 1 second?
Well, of course, co-host.
Yes, man. No, look, I know we want to get to the callers, but two things. Thanks to our executive producer, Sister Rona. She let us know that the margarita situation happened at the Grand River Academy in Detroit, Michigan. That's where that situation happened that was talking about.
In Detroit.
Yeah.
In
but
Detroit.
The point I wanted to bring out, but the point I wanted to bring out, and it goes with, I don't, Brother Kamal mentioned about Savior's Day and making a presentation years ago, and the thing about it was not about individuals coming to Detroit and just getting what you want. It was about the believers moving into a collective area. And there's a reason why I'm saying that. Because something that Brother Fahim said is that there was a challenge in some communities, but the people that was living in the communities and this happened in my city, people in the community really couldn't fight because they was renting their homes. And as long as you're renting, I remember a university was buying up this section of homes, and the people in the community would want to fight back, but they really had no power to fight back because the university didn't even talk to the people that lived there. They talked to the people that owned the houses there. And yes, as long as the people that own the houses there want to sell them, the people that live there, it didn't matter. So unless you're living collectively together, even Brother Darrell's situation, you may stay and fight, but if somebody buys around you and start to change certain things and raises taxes and you trying to fight, you'll just get – they'll just buy you out. They'll just roll you out, and you'll end up bowing down if you don't have a collective power. And that's why when we talk about unity – unity applies in every aspect of this process. And if we don't buy plots of land, like you said, when that road tried to change, it was about the economics in that community and the ownership in that community to have the power to demand what they wanted in that community. And until we talk like that and think like that, we won't make it. And I also will add that there was a time frame, like what Brother Fahim said, and the schools and the different things start to build. That didn't just plan, like you say, okay, well, why we ain't got this in 5 years today? But then they talk about that at Savings Day last year. They talked about that at Savings Day 2 years ago when other folks planned 10, 20, 30 years in advance. And
oh,
we know how to write our history. So when we don't see nothing right away and you don't understand the process of building community and nation, then you start to get doubtful. But we don't mind when other folks start to gentrify our community. We don't even know how that process even happened and when it started. We just think, oh, they doing it everywhere now. No, that didn't happen yesterday. That's been in the works and the plans to make that happen.
It's interesting that you say that, Brother Terrence. I once built a project in a community. And typically when you build something that doesn't necessarily meet the ordinance in a said community, you have to go before the Planning and Development Committee, which is a group of elected officials, and you have to argue or contest your reasons as to why you're wanting to build something. So I went to the meeting, and there were folks in the meeting that were unhappy with the said product that I was developing and investing in. And we got into the meeting, and I think one of the narrators of the meeting conveyed and communicated, say, everybody who was here to contest this specific project, could you stand up? And everybody stood up. He said, everybody who owns land in this said area, could you stay standing up? Can you continue to stand? The majority of the people had to sit down. He said, you know, we're here to hear from the landowners in this said area and hear their viewpoints on what the said project actually is. So long story short, if we're not stakeholders having ownership in our said communities, we might have a say in terms of some of the tax dollars we spend, but we don't necessarily have the same level of magnitude as landowners in that said area or a stronger voice as landowners. So we have to be in that position, you know. So identify what you want, identify where you want to be, but place a stake, you know, so that you can have a voice, you can have a say in your said communities.
Yeah. This is Brother Kamal, and I will add to that and say, you know, we've all seen when we have a community that gets blighted, a black community gets blighted, time goes on, it gets worse and worse, and then all of a sudden we see these investors come in. People buy these homes, not of our ethnic group, and all of a sudden, a couple of years later, maybe 3, 4, 5 years later, the whole neighborhood has been transformed. It's beautiful, where it looked like it was never going to be a nice place at all. But now it's beautiful. And this is because these new stakeholders come in, owners, they come in, they buy the property, they get the government entities behind them, so they put new laws and ordinances in place to say, for example, we're not going to have liquor stores within within a mile of this area or whatever, or within this thoroughfare. And they change the whole complexion of the neighborhood, and they have a vision of what they want this nation, this neighborhood to be. You know, we have, the scripture says it good. It says, you know, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. And in another place it says, without vision, the people perish. So we have to have the vision to know what we can do, how to do it, and put our stake down, buy the property, own the property, so that we have a say in what it will become. So I just wanted to say
that's correct. Yeah, I mean, Brother Kamal, just to add on to that, it says that, you know, a community and a nation is ran by those who show up. You know, I mean, you got to show up. You know, there's always a neighborhood association in every said community that we actually have in. But the question is, do you show up? Because as a collective voice, you have a lot more power than an individual who actually has a discrepancy with a said certain individual, said political individual. But it's, you know, you have to show up, and the stronger you are as a group, you know, the better you are.
And, you know, underlying all of this is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad begs black people not to do. And black people did it, and that's integration.
Come on.
Because integration destroyed the genetic preference for company of our own kind. And, you know, listening to you all, you're bringing out such a critical point here. At the root of anything is togetherness. You know, we've been made by integration to seek after what white people have. And that has evolved into a desire to be around them and be with them. And that is not what our forebears wanted when they started what was renamed the Civil Rights Movement. They weren't seeking to have lunch and lay in hotels with white people. They wanted respect. They wanted equality. But it was turned into a movement to integrate. And so now we look at these finished products. As you all are saying, things are planned decades in advance. And we've lost knowledge and comprehension of being on the ground floor. If you want a ownership and wealth, you have to be like Brother Fahim is here, Brother Kamal. We have to develop the land. We should be thrilled to get it in this condition, so that we make it what we want. It's better for us to go. If 500 Muslims go and converge on Detroit and we all live together, I don't care what the houses look like when we move there. We clean them up. We move in them. I don't care how basic they are. I don't care if it's a tent. Because if I'm living next door to Muslims, I don't need ADT security system. I don't need the Ring, video Ring bell, you know, and guns and protection, because I live with Muslims who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. There's a built-in peace. There's a built-in protection. You know, and then from that, we begin to develop based on what people among us like you all, like the two of you and others, who have this vision. And remember, Brother Dr. Haleem put up all the things the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which Muhammad Speaks used to have, the artist renderings of the communities. I grew up in a community like that in Columbus, Ohio. It's not as though we haven't done this. I lived in a beautiful black middle-class community called Eastgate. that really started with the men that came home from World War II, Tuskegee Airmen, a new generation of my parents and others who were teachers and doctors and lawyers. But because of segregation, we had to live together. Now, if you get some money, you run to live with white people. And this is what's got to stop. We have to stop this hemorrhaging. And like Brother Fahim just said, we have to show up, Brother Terrence. You know, they said as saviors. What do you mean they? Are you? Is it a they? Isn't it we?
Come on.
You know,
that's
are you right. just in the audience? Are you just a spectator? That's why the minister accuses us of treating him like an entertainer in a lovely song. We just want to come and yell and get inspired and then go right back to Negroism. So this is beautiful here tonight. I'm ready to go. I mean, I'm ready to not go off the call, but go and do this. I've had enough of these people. These people. But let's take some more calls.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to add a brief comment to that before going to the callers. Just a little two-part. One, it's going to strengthen our relationship, too, because in this current society, you cannot marry the girl next door.
Right.
There is no girl next door. There's no family together.
That's right.
And so that has been taken away from us. And we go all over town to our schools and everything else, so we're not even right there together to come form relationships. And this, just to hit on what Brother Fahim said real quick in terms of everybody having a role, that's how we now have to think while we're doing whatever it is we do. If I'm a cashier right now, well, we need cashiers because we have our businesses. So we have to think in terms of what we're doing right now, utilizing it for our own selves, not, oh, my God, I hate my job and I'm going to be nasty to everybody there. No, let me be a God at this. Because we need this. Whatever it is that we're doing right now, we have to start think of it in terms of that society that we are building. So I just wanted to add that on.
No, that's a beautiful point. You know, and we're doing everything in reverse. You know, this is why black businesses don't flourish, because we want to build a business somewhere, and then black people come from all over the place to patronize the business. But people eat, they shop, they worship, they go to school where they live.
Right.
They don't go 20 miles. Well, come over to the Salam restaurant. Come over to this. It's not going to happen. And it doesn't happen. You may get somebody to come once or twice to try to demonstrate support, but you have to have real support. Birds live together. Zebras live together. Bees live together. And once you reside together, all of your needs, you'll start meeting your needs organically.
Right.
You're going to have an elementary school. You're just going to automatically, organically have it.
That's right.
Instead of running around, I'm trying to find a good school for my daughter. I'm going to go over to this white school over here, this magnet school over there. This is our problem. We're not accepting our own and being ourselves. And that's what our brothers are calling us to do in real life.
That's right.
There's theory and then there's practical application. We're taught in self-improvement. Practical application, that's what it's time for now. We got Brother Hoyle, one of our top fishermen out of Memphis. He's got a comment.
Yes, ma'am. I have a comment. No question today. It's a comment. So I'm going to let you leave with
Bart. We got Sister Rona.
I had a comment. Yes. I want to thank Brother Kamal, the excellent financial and real estate guy. And thank him for his good work, and the Brother Fahim and the excellent comments they made. Sister Ava, I just want to commend you on what you said. Integration and the miseducation of our people. You know, I can think of my parents, just like your parents, retired teachers. And when they got married, when they were coming up, they were, you know, marriage was a priority. When they first bought a house, when I was a baby, they bought a house. My dad said, I didn't rent no house. I don't want to rent nothing.
Come on.
Okay, so that was in our parents', you know, mentality. And I'm going to tell you, and Terrence knows, his parents around the same young age. Brother Terrence, I want to say condolences to you too, brother. May God bless you and your family. And
thank you.
You know, our generation, there was the integration. You know, they didn't teach you in these public schools how to buy a house or to buy a house. You know, when we were coming up, the big thing was get out and party and rent apartments. And but you know, you look in these cities. You know, I live in Memphis, and you were talking about how I'm just going from my generation. A lot of that crack generation came. And the people, black people that own the homes, I'm going to Detroit because I got family that lives in Detroit. And a lot of those people lost those homes to drugs. They couldn't pay the taxes. And also you had in place, you know, you had the Homeowners Loan Corporation, all these things that attack, you know, that went against black people, against buying houses. You also had the U.S. Housing Act, Urban Renewal. You had AFDC and all of these entities, GI Bill and how they discriminated against blacks with homeowners. You got all the, even up to today with Wells Fargo being, you know, being caught with discrimination. So my thing is, you know, we have to get to a collective base. Like I said, we got to get out of the renter mentality, you know. And owning a home was really kind of discouraged, you know, because number one, the breakup of the black family. In our generation, you know, the marriage is, you know, it's coming back, but a lot of breakup of male-female relationships and black families. So it's coming back, you know, a lot, especially in the nation where but all of this, you know, Allah is going to bring it back into fruition. And I think once we, I help Brother Kamal and our brothers, and even if you don't want to move up there, just even own the houses so we can take a foothold of land ownerships. And Brother Kamal, I would love to see you come down here in these parts in Memphis, Arkansas, Mississippi. The land is, before all the foreigners come by all this land, I mean, it's land for days. Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, where we can build black communities down here. The South is ready. So I know Minister Farrakhan wanted us to start with the Mecca, but the South, you know, the weather, the soil, and, you know, we have Brother Lewis who's doing a great job with the Black Mecca situation in Atlanta, you know, and he's doing work in his area in Baton Rouge. But I'd love to see you when we finish up there, come down Mississippi especially.
Hey, Brother, our roots are in the South, and that land down there is good land. My father had a strong focus for us to have land in the South. And, brother, I'm going to get some of that farmland. Don't worry. I mean, we can't grow food, enough food in Detroit to take care of us, so we definitely need that farmland
definitely
down there.
But, yeah, because when Yassin, your brother, was down here, we went through the area. You know, he was doing a little ministering in this area. And we went through out there, and you'd be surprised. I mean, and these devils are giving up these farms. I'm telling you right now, they can't afford it. These devils, you know, the government is paying them not to grow food. So they they just leave anyway. So, yeah, it's for the
Well, you know,
the
and then a lot of the believers are purchasing large numbers of acres in the South, especially in Georgia. We'll get there, but we got to get this. We got to get our foothold. And then, of course, you got to have some place to sell the produce. We're going to get it. We're going to get it. But this is, you know, we have to do this as well. We have to have our foothold. And we have to generate financial empowerment as well. so we can invest. Because one problem, too, is we with business, with land acquisition, we have enough money to buy in, then we don't have the money to develop and sustain. And
yes,
so we have to do that, too. But thank you, Brother Hoyle, so much. We're going to try to get a couple more calls.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry for taking time.
No, don't apologize. Beautiful call.
Yes, ma'am.
Beautiful call. Yes, we've had a sister hold. We've got a couple of callers have been holding for a while. One of them is out of Detroit, Sister Patricia, and she has a comment. Assalamu alaikum, Ramadan Mubarak, Sister Patricia. Okay, let's see. She might have gone on mute. Sister Patricia?
You there?
Yes, ma'am.
You there? Oh,
yes.
I had it on mute. I didn't want to be, I didn't know when I was going to get in, and I didn't want to have too much background noise.
Yes, ma'am.
Wa alaikum salam, Ramadan Kareem. I was wanting to make a comment because I was in Detroit. I'm not in Detroit now. I moved to Georgia. I've been down here since September.
Okay.
But and when Brother Kamal had presented that to us, he did a wonderful package. It's the mindset of the believers that wasn't really grabbing it, what he was offering, because he was trying his best to help us. I mean, he gave us so many options to be able to purchase property. And so there were some who did jump in and took it. There's some who, you know, hesitated. And that's where I think that, you know, the mindset has to be clear. Because when you sit over there and you see in Dearborn, the Arabs came in one by one. And they done took over Dearborn. It was a Polish area. And they
Good
got their
point.
Own schools. They got their own social service. They got all their businesses there. They run in Dearborn. When you come in Dearborn, they look at you like, what are you doing here? You know, and they have their, they're on the police station, on the police force. They're in the schools. They got everything. They even doing their own parks because they got signs. We don't want dogs because they want to be on the grass, walk with their, you know, shoes off. They don't want dogs running all around. You got a Southwest Detroit. Mexicans live over there. They done took over Southwest Detroit, you know, and it was one by one. They got in the area. They went and pulled their other friends and family, and they brought them in there. I see what Brother Kamal is doing because it is there. That is the vision because when the mayor, Kwame, was involved, when he was mayor, he found out half of the people in the city council own these raggedy houses. And he told me, fix them up. If you don't fix them up, we're going to tear them down. You know, because why would you want your neighborhood to look like that? He told them to come back. See, a lot, like you said, they run out of the east side of Detroit and go into the suburbs, Southfield, Bloomfield, you know, Sterling Heights, way out there, you know, and mix with the Indians and whites and whatever. And then they forget about Detroit because they think they done made it. So they leave out of Detroit, and they let the neighborhood go down because they don't care no more. And so that's where it's the mindset of a brother and a sister who got to make that decision because Brother Kamal has a beautiful strategy, what he's trying to do. And I know,
that's
I'm
right.
not for sure, but I know what area that he might be talking about. I ain't going to mention the name because there are some houses that look like mansions. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm
just there years ago.
I can see the vision of that, you know. And like you said, if you're living next door to each other, there's no reason why you should have an alarm system. You're walking outside in the back of your garden and you're seeing your brother and sister, and then you're hearing the call of prayer. They do that in Dearborn. They do the call, the call of prayer. They shut everything down. This is in Michigan, Dearborn, you know.
That's
and so it's our mindset. It's our mindset. That we
Absolutely.
Have to stop and realize it and drop that crazy marijuana that they smoking on and all that other crazy stuff that they're messing with. And then they can say, yeah, I need to buy me some property. Yes, I need to, you know, have something of my own. And that's where I guess us as MGT and FOI got to step in and try to pull the individuals back into their original self. Thank you for letting me share. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sister Patricia. Great call. And it goes back to what you all are saying about renting. Now, of course, it's a battle. It's a war because many times black people try to purchase land and they are thwarted. We have that problem right across the street from Mas Marion with that strip mall across the street from us. You know, you have the absentee owners, and there's a component of this that is gangster, you know, and that's why the Nation of Islam is the key to everything, because people tend to understand that once we decide we're going to do something, it's going to be done. All right, we're not turning around, and that's the mindset of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You know, this is our destiny. This belongs to us. But we have to have a mindset of taking back what belongs to us. And this is where, as Brother Kamal opened up with Isaiah, you know, we have to have, and Sister just said, it's a mindset. We have to have the spirit and the mind and then the willingness to take physical action. But we can't just sit around talking in theory all the time, because if we do, we're condemning our children and grandchildren to another generation of police shootings and drugs and absentee parents, and the list goes on and on. Okay, we're going to go to Sister Brenda. She has a comment, and we're down to about 6 minutes here. All right, Sister Brenda, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Ramadan, Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak to you too, my sister and the panelists. But as I was listening to the conversation, I think those that came on kind of mentioned some things that I was concerned about. But I was wondering about, you know, the project separation, right? I never get a chance to tune in into the Zoom meeting or whatever. I have not seen the presentation from Kamal, Brother Kamal. But I'm wondering about the collaboration networking with believers or, you know, people that's not in the nation. How do we, you know, bring that together where, like, in my family, this is, you know, like we own the whole block, like 162 acres, but there is a constant battle even among us because I'm a Muslim. You know, there's Muslims in the family, but there are Christians as well. So I'm like, how do we fight the battle or collaborate, you know, properties when there's such a uproar, a chaos in the families or in the community?
Well, are you saying between the religions?
The religion and the, you know, yes, community, period, like, in my family, it's like we have Christians, you know, Christians in the family, but there are some of us that are Muslims. So the chaos,
yes,
comes in because of the religion. We cannot come together to start a process because everybody is like, well, I'm not dealing with that Islam, or I'm not listening to that, or, you know, we cannot come together on a common ground. So I'm wondering,
yes,
regarding the project separation being the model for, you know, bringing us together as a people, you know, how do we start that process for those that won't even listen?
Well, you don't worry about that at this stage. You start with those who profess belief and are committed to a safe haven for black people. Yes, Master Farid Muhammad came for the 40, then 17 million, now 40 to 60 million. He said to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we are taught, there would never be mass acceptance and registration into the Nation of Islam by our people, but it would be a small group of people of us with the willingness to submit to the discipline. It's not even really the theology. It's the discipline. So we're saying you're not going to have pig in this community, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's enough people who are in harmony with that to get started. And what Master Farid Muhammad said, when the people see the beautiful life and the beauty of the environment that we built, they will come. They'll be willing to submit. My husband was just talking about it today. The Mormons in Salt, you go to fly into Salt Lake City. You don't have to be a Mormon to go there, but go try to find some alcohol and some drugs in a strip club or whatever. You're not going to find it there because their way of life dominates.
Right.
So we're seeking refuge with one another from all that. You know, we can only do so much at a time.
You're right.
So right now the call is for those who want to live a certain way of life, because that's the only way we are going to be protected. We don't use guns, knives. We don't smoke marijuana and do cocaine and beat up on each other. See, all of that, and it's just an understanding. You know, we don't build a wall around the community. It's just like white folks. Their neighborhoods have invisible lines of demarcation that black people don't cross because it's a mindset. It's a mindset.
Right.
But we just have to soldier on. But just take comfort in knowing they'll come eventually or not.
Because they call me
That's
a
right.
bully. They call me a bully. They say I'm trying to stronghold everybody to my
Well,
way.
leave them alone. Because sooner, you know, Jesus said, I'll take one and leave the other. I mean, I don't mean to be harsh, but that's how it's going to be. We're no longer, as the Quran said, you can't keep being neither this nor that. Like the Honorable All Elijah right. Muhammad told the minister about our brother Huey Newton, neuter, you're bowing to a neuter gender. Someone who's neither this nor that. You don't want to be in the Nation of Islam, so you become a splinter group. And we have a lot of that right now. People want to take a piece of this. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, half a belief is fatal. And I asked the minister, what did that mean? I asked him one day, and he said, because you end up going into a mental war against yourself. I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to do that. Eventually, you take yourself out.
Well, Dr. Ava, you done dropped the bomb, Dr. Ava. I think we want to go ahead before the blog talk ends out and close all this out. You dropped the bomb. Drop the mic. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Sister Brenda. And I really want to thank Brother Kamal Muhammad. The Detroit Mecca Project.com is where you can reach him. Brother Fahim Muhammad. FW@urbandb.net is where you can reach him. Thank you, Brother Terrence, Sister Pamela, Sister Donna, Sister Rona, and all of you who have participated in tonight's program, listening, logged in, called in. May Allah bless us all with love and the light of understanding. And once again, Eid Mubarak. Peace be upon us all. This is our time. We are the winner, and we need to start moving out on the commands of the God. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Alaikum salam.